welcome back to The Right Heart. I'm so glad you are here. You are listening to episode 13. I have a fantastic topic and guest for you today. I know I always say that in the beginning of the show, but I really feel like I have just hit the jackpot so far with guests, and I'm excited about the topic today too. But before we get started, I want to take a minute and thank each and every one of you who have given this show a chance so far, especially all of you who are sharing the show on Facebook and Twitter, who are talking to your friends and your family about it, who are leaving wonderful comments and reviews. It is such a blessing to me and an affirmation of all of the work that goes into the show, because it does take a lot of time and a lot of energy. And really, when you do that, when you share it, when you contribute to the success of the show, it really does move me forward to a place where I can help keep the lights on for the podcast. So thank you so much for all of your affirmations and all of the ways that you're passing on a blessing that you've received through the show to someone else. So the topic for this episode is being a working Catholic mom. I have a wonderful guest for you guys. Her name is Dr. Mary Wallace. She is a fellow Baton Rougean and friend of mine. I met her when we both started doing Faith and Good Counsel, the show that I, the radio show that I regularly contribute to here in Baton Rouge, a few years ago. So we met over that and have kind of kept up over the years. And let me tell you, this woman is such a treat. She is such a solid, wonderful, second mama feeling kind of a woman. And you are going to get so much out of this episode, whether you work your tail off full time in the home, like yours truly, or if you work part time or full time outside of the home. So she's such a treat. And let me actually tell you a little bit more about her before we get started. Mary has 5 children, and she is actually polishing up a manuscript for a book. It's going to be called The Working Catholic Mom, after her blog, actually, theworkingcatholicmom.com. Mary has so much wisdom and balance to share with us on the issue of being a working Catholic mom, and I am thrilled to have her with us today. Dr. Mary, thanks for coming on the show. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Erin. It's so great to be here.
So, Mary, let's kind of get started with you giving us a little bit of a background with regards to you and your husband and your family and how you ended up being a working mom when you didn't actually set out at the beginning of your marriage to do that. That wasn't really your dream to be a working mom. So can you kind of give us some background?
Sure. So it depends on how far you want to go back. When I was in college, I really did fall into that whole idea of, you know, what is a career woman and, you know, what is feminism and all of these things. And then I met my future husband, Stephen, and he really loved me through a lot of faults that I had and helped me understand that relationships with people were much more important than pursuing things of the world. And I went on to obtain my graduate degree sort of because one of the reasons is because he was finishing up his undergrad and I didn't want to leave him. I didn't want to find a job outside of the town we were in. They didn't have a lot of jobs back then in the town we were going to college at. And I went into grad school so I could stay near him. We had just gotten married. And then he still had one semester left, and I went on to my career right outside of where we were going to college. And so we had sort of a weekend marriage type situation where he would have to drive on the weekends about 3 hours. We lived apart that first semester that I was working.
Mary, we did that too. I have to interrupt real quick. Mike and I's first semester of being married was fall of 08, and I had to finish school at LSU. Yeah. And Michael was all the way in Houston working, and so we did the same thing. So we share an anniversary and a terrible way to start your marriage.
Right, and this is so parallel. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I was pregnant at that point too.
Like,
that first semester that I was working, I found out I was pregnant, and I had an incredible supervisor who loved me through a lot of that because I was very upset, you know, being pregnant, going into my career. I sort of resented it, which I know, listeners, please don't judge me.
No.
I have really reconciled and all those things, but I really wanted to work, and I thought that's what you do. You go to college and you work and do those sorts of things. But then when Steve joined me and we became young parents, and then we were open to life, we wanted more children, we wanted a large family, and we battled back and forth about debt and, you know, being fiscally responsible and, you know, how are we going to provide for a large family. And sort of, I saw your article a couple of days ago about NFP, Aaron, and I was thinking those are the same types of struggles we dealt with in terms of NFP and really trying to understand the beauty in the church's teaching and what wisdom there was in NFP. And right about, I would say, the year of 2001, Steve and I had been really discerning, you know, sort of, what do we do in our careers? What are we doing? What does it really mean? And we had been involved with Marriage Encounter as a teen couple. And so we had been around very good Catholic teaching and formation, and especially in terms of the sacrament of marriage. And my friends were women who stayed at home. And I always felt a little outside of that circle, but I yearned to have what they had. And I guess you could say it was a little bit of holy jealousy to know that's what they were able to do with their families, and I yearned for that. And so Steve and I had been praying and praying, and we had a couple who was also praying for us at the time in Marriage Encounter for Steve to find a way to provide for our family. And at that time, we had three children. And in 2002, Steve became critically ill. He became, it's a whole story involving Padre Pio and everything, but it's a beautiful story, too, of obedience to God. And I had to begin work. I had to stay at work. There was no other option. Steve was not able to work, really, for 4 years after he was ill. And even when he started to go into the workforce at that time, I was making a lot of money to provide for our family, or what I thought was a lot of money, and we were still open to life and still open to what the Lord was calling us to. And Steve really struggled with finding the right company who would employ him at a decent wage. You know, we talk a lot about living wage in the Catholic Church, and we saw that firsthand. You know, how was Steve going to provide for us, you know, financially with the jobs that he was interviewing for and being considered for. And so it was really a challenge for me because at that, you know, it's funny, I began my career thinking, why are we pregnant? And I really want to work. And then in the middle, when, you know, we were really discerning God's call and we really thought he was calling me home, it became a situation where I had to work. And I resented that for a long time, you know, and spent years really in resentment and in major jealousy in ways that became very sinful. And it was only when I began to hear God in all of that, when I began to strip away what I wanted and what I desired and really listen to him, that I did understand that the prayer for Steve to provide for us was really being answered. But that involved me working outside of the home as well.
So Mary, what were your specific prayers before and after this change in your prayer? So what were you praying for before you kind of learned to submit and trust God's plan for your family? And how did you pray afterwards?
Sure. So before it was, Lord, you know, give Steve a job. Give us, please, Lord, please, you know, he needs a job that makes X amount of money if we're going to provide for this family. You know, forgetting that the provision comes from the Lord, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the same kind of prayers that probably many of us pray every single day, and we don't stop and think at all, you know, that it's really us trying to bear our will upon God, really. And so it was, you know, Lord, help me find a way to stay at home. You know, it was weird stuff now that I think back on it. I feel really embarrassed even telling the listeners this, because it was a string of prayers that was just me saying, Lord, this is my will, and I want you to find a way to make it happen. And afterwards, so when Steve was in the hospital, one of the things that I came back to later, there was a moment when Steve was in the hospital that my prayers looked like that. Lord, let him live. Lord, please don't take away my husband. Lord, blah, blah, blah. You know, those prayers you pray when you really, really want your loved one to live, you know, and you're just wrapped up in that emotion of, what am I going to do if this doesn't go my way, you know? Mm-hmm. And there was a moment, I would sleep in the intensive care unit waiting room, and the nurses one night woke me up, because what I didn't know at the time is they thought Steve was going to die that night, so they wanted to give me some more time with him. So they woke me up to bathe him. That was the guise that they used. We need you to come and bathe him. And when I bathed him, all of his numbers would go the right way. His blood pressure would come down. His heart rate would rest a little bit easier. He would begin to flutter a little bit, his eyes. His temperature would come down. All of his vitals would go in the right way. And I would stop touching him because the monitors would go off. And the nurses said, no, you need to keep touching him. And so I would continue to bathe him, and they would just stand there in awe of the numbers. And later they told me, or that night they told me, it's your touch. Like, you've got to come and bathe him every night. You know, you have to bathe him every night.
Wow.
And I went back to the ICU after they told me, you know, how his numbers were going, and I said, Lord, it's your will, whatever, I am ready to submit, whether you take him, whether you keep him here, you know. And so that night, I think the prayer really was, I submit to everything you have in store for our life, right? So probably years later, I came back to that prayer and thought, wait a minute, I trusted the Lord in that moment. If I trusted him that he had my best interest at heart, and that he knows my heart, he knows my life, he knows how everything's going to end in this story, that I needed to trust that he had me in the work world for some reason. Now, I don't know what that reason could be. I don't know. I mean, I've seen little glimmers and blessings throughout my career, but I have to trust him that he's got me in the right place until he moves me again. And I'm just now so grateful that he's given me those experiences. My degree started to make sense when Steve got sick, you know, that I was able to have a master's degree, that I could work in a job, that I could have money to provide for our family. You know, if I wouldn't have gone on to pursue my master's degree, or if I wouldn't have gone on to pursue work at the beginning of my career, we would have been sunk financially. Mm-hmm. And we weren't. And I thank God for that. I have a very grateful feeling about that.
Wow. You have such a powerful story. I remember hearing, I don't even think I heard all of the story, but I heard most of it a while back, a few years ago, when we first started doing Faith and Good Counsel together in the old days with Stacy. But just such a powerful story and a powerful witness of faith and trust in the Lord, and how a lot of times God has things up his sleeve for our lives that we could never expect.
No.
And we would never choose for ourselves, I think. I mean, I read it. Oh, it was a YouTube video by a Father Basil Burns that's beautiful. And it's the YouTube video is Father Basil basically reading as a homily a poem that he wrote about how he would not choose what God chose for him, but it's a good thing because he right. would not have chosen it. So I'll have to post that in the show notes because it is absolutely beautiful and it just totally echoes your story.
Well, I will have to look that up. I'll tell you one of the scripture passages, and I'm not going to remember the number right now. Maybe we can post this in the show notes too. But and I know this was Jesus commissioning the apostles, but when he's telling them, you're going to go where you don't want to go, you're going to get up and be dressed by in a way that you don't want to be dressed, and that echoes I reflect on that verse quite a bit. Like, there are places, I'm back in the home that I grew up in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I would have never chosen that for myself. I wanted to see the world and, you know, wanted to work in big cities and do this and that. And that is not what the Lord had for me. And I also think that had I chosen my own plans, I would be buying into the secular culture. I would be buying into what the world offers women right now, and that's not very pretty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would be buying into a lot of things, and I would feel very uncomfortable, or I would feel very comfortable in what I see as a very sinful world right now. And so I'm so grateful. I'm grateful, you know, that my faith held me together through all of this, that my husband is such an incredible partner for me in this life, that we have a sacramental marriage. You know, there's so many things I'm grateful for, and including my work. I mean, I give it all back to God.
Oh, that's so wonderful, Mary. So kind of moving on from your story, I want to know how you live it out and what that has looked like over the years. So the first thing I wanted to ask you is, how has being a working mom made you maybe more intentional about your home life, about traditions or routines with your husband and your children?
Yeah, so one of the big things that it is an intentional thing, and it's intentional from the moment I wake up until the moment I go to bed, and I'm exhausted sometimes, but I think that looks like any mom. I don't think that's particular to the working Catholic mom. We all work, whether that's inside the home or outside of the home. But there's a lot of intentional things that I do that I want to share with women who do work and who do want to live a faithful Catholic lifestyle. One of the very first things that I would suggest and that I do quite a bit is making sure that you're putting in 100% of your time at work doing work. That eliminates some of the things that I see other women or even men having to do, which is to bring work home or stay real, real late to get it done. And in my line of work, staying late is the rule versus the exception. And so I've been very blessed that I've had supervisors that understand that I want to have work-life balance. And for me, that means, you know, a reasonable day, except in those peak seasons. And then I prepare my family for those peak seasons. As a college administrator, my office oversees homecoming at this large university. And so I know that during homecoming week, I'm going to work 70 to 100 hours that week.
Wow.
And my family knows that. And yeah. I get to bring my family to a lot of these things as well. So we make sure that I'm intentional during that week to set the house up. So I've got the menus planned. I've got, if I can, I'll cook the weekend before. So, you know, Steve just has to take it out and heat it up. Or we also have older children, so they're able to help as well. But for the most part, during a regular week, I'm leaving between 4:30 and 5 each day. I'm very intentional about that. And in fact, I try to model that for my staff, even if they're single, because it's important for them to understand that work is not... I think the difference sometimes between working women and women who work is that working women identify themselves through the work they do. Women who work don't necessarily do that. I don't identify, my first identity is not college administrator. My first identity is married daughter of the king, you know, and that encompasses everything he has in store for me. So I'm able to view my work through the eyes of God versus through what I want to accomplish, you know. All of that will fall into place because I'm honoring God. But I don't identify with work in a way that says, this is my identity, this is my true identity. I am a college administrator. Mm-hmm. You know, I happen to be a college administrator, but it's not who I am.
Yeah.
So I'm very intentional about work-life balance in those ways. Another thing that's real important to me are the big traditions of our church. So seasons are really important for me in the liturgical year, and that's how I really help to catechize our children. It's as if that's when I get their attention the most, like something big is happening. So Advent, we have lots of traditions that revolve around Advent, leading up to Christmas Eve and Christmas. And we do a lot of catechetical understanding of the church through Advent. Lent, same way. Easter. Ordinary time is a time for us to really talk to our children about the faith. So I catch them on the fly because teenagers are different. You can't sit down and have this big philosophical conversation. You know, they deal in 140 character bits, and you know, you've got to catch them on the fly or hold them captive in the car on a long trip. We also do things like when we go on family vacation, they know we're going to pray the rosary on the way to, you know, we do a lot of trips to Disney World. So we pray the rosary on the way to Disney World. Yeah, and talk about things too. Like when you've got them captive in the car, that's really good. When I'm able to pick them up after school, that's another captive moment to see how their day went. And a lot of the conversation for me with my kids in the car and asking them about their day, if I hear of anything that sort of goes against the value system, you know, if they say, I saw so-and-so bullying so-and-so, you know, I'm able to pull out those virtues, you know, and, you know, how would you handle that, and how do we build that virtue muscle, you know, so that you can take up for that person or, you know, hold people accountable and things like that. So those are some of the intentional things I do. We definitely pray grace before every meal. Steve works for the Knights of Columbus, so some nights he's not home for dinner because he's meeting with his clients. And so, you know, whoever is home for dinner, we are praying. And we do, of course, Mass on Sundays. Our oldest daughter doesn't live with us anymore. And she said, but I still want to come to Mass. That was such a balm to my soul, you know, to know that she still wanted to come to Mass with us. And so we've been going to Mass together as a family, you know, all of her life, and we get to continue that tradition. And I've added a new tradition that on Sundays we're doing Sunday dinner. So
I love that.
Yeah, so, you know, she comes on Sundays and spends the whole day with us, and now we get the big pot roast and, you know, the things your grandma used to do. So we're trying to start those types of traditions, too, that are not necessarily religious in nature, but they're breaking bread, and, you know, we're we're sharing with one another as a family, so...
I love that. Mary, I was going to say a little bit earlier that my oldest child is about to be six, but already the car is the best place to talk about God. I'm glad to know that I can have that up my sleeve for when he's a teenager.
Especially when they're teenagers, because they do not, I have found I'm a better parent to younger kids because I can say it and it's gospel truth, right?
Yeah.
But the teenagers, they are they want to know the why. And it really does stretch you in your own faith, because if you don't know the why, it makes you go look up the why.
Yeah.
And that's good, because we're always learning about our faith. We are not meant to have all the answers. And so, you know, you're able to find out those answers and talk it through with them at their level. But again, there are 140 character bytes. And also, I'll tell you another thing that I do as a mom. So my Facebook is up all day. I don't know if your listeners can have Facebook up all day at work, but mine is, just because sometimes students communicate with me through Twitter and Facebook. So I can see the activity of my older kids on Facebook. And
oh.
If I see an article pop up that is faith-related, I'm able to, you know, post that onto their page quick. And it makes me think about them during the day. I'm able to pray for them throughout the day.
So. Yeah. So it sounds like being intentional is something that you've really, really cultivated, because you aren't with your children all day.
Right.
And it sounds like you have a strong family culture that has a lot of traditions and a lot of routines and things that you've, you know, created as they've gotten older to kind of fit where everyone is. So
yeah.
I love that. I think that's really helpful to hear.
If we ever veer, because there are sometimes years where, you know, my mom died in 2010 and we really veered from some Advent traditions. And our children really missed that. They talked about it for years afterwards. We never want to do what we did in 2010. Mama, please pull out the Advent chain. You know,
mm-hmm.
they're really, they know the traditions and they want them. They're seeking. They seek closeness with the Lord through those traditions.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I can't wait until my children are asking for those things. We're just in the first few years of kind of deciding what we want to do, but I really look forward to having a strong family culture in that way, and I love looking up to you with that.
You will. I mean, and this is for you where it all starts, right? So laying the foundation so that is all they know. I think that's been helpful for Steve and I. That's all our kids know. They know we go to church. They know we pray before meals. They know, you know, all of these things. And we're able to add things as they get older as well. You know, being a working Catholic mom, it's a rare occasion for me to go to adoration. It's just really difficult. And but when they get older and they go to these youth events, they have adoration. And to be able to do adoration with your teenage children is just fantastic. And to see the love of Christ, that they have the love of Christ, for Christ, it's just beautiful. And I have so enjoyed that with my children, seeing them grow in their faith.
And Mary, one thing I just remembered this about you is that I think I remember that your family has done several different things as far as the education of your children, but they have gone to public school for many years, right? So
correct.
So I love that you actually didn't even mention that yet, but the parents are the first catechists of their children. And I think it sounds like you guys do a great job of catechizing your children. You live the liturgical year in your home, and you have children who go to public school, which I think a lot of people have like a fear issue with, oh, we can't send them to public school. But you've done it, and you sounds like you've done it well, and you've made it work.
And I'll tell you that our public school situation is beautiful because we're in a very close-knit community. The mm-hmm. community is really centered on the church just in general. And so the teachers at the high school, I had when I was in high school. So everybody knows your family. And I'll tell you this, the other thing that I've noticed, and no knock against Catholic schools at all, but the culture is permeating the Catholic schools as well. So I don't think that parents who send their kids to Catholic school can sit back and rest either. You know, so, you know, catechizing when your kids are in public school is important, catechizing when they're in Catholic school is important, and catechizing if you're homeschooling is important as well. And I actually have a blog post about that on my website that I can send to you.
Oh yeah, that'd be great.
The notes. Because you can't rest as a parent. You can't the faith formation is so important. It is the important thing. And you can't, we've got to always be on guard with that. And so, you know, we've been diligent with it, with being in public schools, but our kids are able to go to youth group with their public school friends. And I'll tell you, my kids have taken kids to youth night that would not step foot in the Catholic Church. And some of those children are coming now into catechism from families that either are cradle Catholics that have fallen away or even Protestant families. And so I look at my kids, I'm amazed by my kids that they are so bold in inviting people to the church. That wouldn't have happened when I was growing up. You know, we were just not the inviting generation. And our kids are doing it. So, I'm glad they're in public schools because they're able to bring those kids who might normally not have a chance to know about God. They're bringing them to youth night. So
I love that. How awesome. That is so awesome.
Yeah.
So Mary, I have another question. I wanted to ask you, as far as living out your faith in the workplace, if you could just give us a little bit on what that looks like for you. You know, is it what you say or don't say or don't do? You know, what does that look like naturally in that apostolate of just natural friendship and coworker friendships and that kind of thing?
Sure. So part of what it looks like is unseen. So one of the things that I do every day when I enter my office and sit at my desk is to give God my day. You know, just, this is for you. I love you. Whatever would happen today for it to be Holy Spirit inspired and, you know, those types of things. So it's just a very quick prayer before I even touch my computer. Mm-hmm. And nobody would ever notice that. I mean, that's not anything that would be able to be seen. The other thing is, and I write for Integrated Catholic Life with Randy Hain, and the truth of the matter is that it's not about proselytizing at all. And especially, you know, I work at a public institution of higher education, so I can't go out and go, hey, let me impose my value system on you, and you come in, and, you know, I'm going to convert you to Catholicism or, you know, whatever. I do some things in my job that I have to follow authority to do. And it wouldn't be things I would normally want to do. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to turn it over to the virtue. You know, how do I approach people? Am I fair? Am I loving in my words? Do I participate in the water cooler gossip talk? You know, what do I have on my social media? How am I treating other people? How am I treating my staff? You know, I have a staff of 15 people. Am I fair and just oriented with them? Do I bark orders at them, or do I have empathy? That doesn't mean I don't hold people accountable. It just means the way in which I approach people is full of virtue versus vice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In the work world, you can see a lot of it's my way or the highway. And if I take that approach, I'm not being real virtuous. And the other thing I do is I lead in a very feminine way. And this is what I really try to do with my blog as well as the book, is to really help women understand that we don't have to be modeled after men in our leadership to have good leadership. And in fact, the research tells us that the feminine form of leadership, the nurturing, empathy, receptivity, all of those things, isn't it funny how those are the same words that we see in, you know, Teresa Benedicta of the Cross and St. John Paul II, those are the same words that in the secular research literature we see in transformational leadership, which is what more women tend to have transformational leadership. And in fact, transformational leadership leads to higher results in the workplace. And so I have to lead in my very authentic way. I can't lead like my husband would lead. And so people know, I mean, they call me Mama Mary at work because they know I'm so maternal, and it's hard for me to turn that off, you know? Mm-hmm. And I used to think that people were uncomfortable with that. But then when I became authentic with it, people really understood my leadership and they appreciate it, you know? And I think that's another way to live out my faith, is that I am maternal. You know, I can't say, oh, I'm Mama Mary at home. I'm so maternal at home, but I'm not at work. Mm-hmm. You know, I am maternal because that's the way I was made in the image of God. So,
yeah. And, you know, one thing that I've read before, at least for one, when I've read St. Jose Maria Escriva's writings, is that we really should strive to be the same person in all the areas of our lives. And I know just from talking to my husband, and also when I was in the workplace, my brief time before I started staying home, admittedly, but people can be so different at work and then at home. And I think when you're very different at home and very than you are at work, one of those two places suffers and gets the kind of the worst of you.
That's right. And it's impossible. It is nearly impossible for people to be bifurcated that way. It brings disunity to the body and soul to be different in that way. St. Teresa Benedict of the Cross wrote a lot about this as well. And, you know, women, especially if you read the Vatican II Fathers documents about, you know, women, this is the time, this is the place for women to aid humanity in not falling. And I often wonder, they must have been on to something, right, if they think it was the women who could aid in not doing that. Well, where are many women? Many women are in the workplace, and that is a place like that our priest and religious cannot go into. That is a place that our husbands cannot fill that role either, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I take it very seriously, you know. I have staff who, you know, who need the loving touch of a mother to help them learn, you know, to help them understand the work world, to help them lead a work-life balance. And it's not to say that men don't do those same things, but we do it in very different ways.
Mm-hmm. Mary, I think a last thing, I probably need to finish up the episode in a little while. I feel like I always keep everyone so late. But I want to ask you what your advice would be for a younger mom who is in that first 5 or 10 years of being a mom and maybe who has to work or chooses to work and is really struggling with guilt of some kind or her decision. What would be your best advice for a mom struggling with that?
Well, I will tell you that guilt and fear are definitely not from God. I would say, you know, making sure you discern correctly and intently. You know, I discern all the time. Is this still where you want me? I'm always looking for the window or the door, you know, mm-hmm. that's opened or cracked. And the Lord's never shown me that. And so I know that the Lord is still having his hand on me in the work world. I would say that there's a certain peace to that when you can find that you have discerned well and that you know that the Lord has you there. And I would also say, check your prayer. You know, if your prayer is, help find, you know, find the way out for me, or, you know, lead the path instead of thy will be done. I think our Mother Mary is such a beautiful example of a true fiat. You know, I'm sure at age 14, 15, she was not thinking she was going to be pregnant and carrying the Son of God, you know, and all of these things, but her fiat of yes to everything God had in store for her is what brought salvation into the world. And so we don't know sometimes what the Lord is doing to us or for us or with us or through us. And accepting that and understanding where your will to work is from. Is it from the Lord, or is it from you wanting to obtain riches or whatever. But once you discern correctly, I think there is a certain peace in that. I would also say being intentional. Some of the strategies I talked about a little bit earlier, but also, you know, trying to live that integrated life. So when you go into the work world, you're not, you know, Mary Wallace college administrator. Now I'm at home, I'm Mary Wallace mom. You know, I am both those things in both places, you know. And, you know, there is some goodness in that, to stay integrated. You know, I think women do bring maternity into the workplace. So those are the types of things. I would also say, I know I struggle with daycare much. You know, and when the children were sick, it was myself who was taken off, and my leave went like crazy. So the first couple of years of our parenting days, we never took vacations because all of my leave and all of Steve's leave were spent on taking care of the kids. You know that that's a temporary thing, that there will be time where you know, your sacrifices for your kids in terms of your leave will not always be like that. That there will be times where you can take off and be with the kids just for fun, or go to a retreat, or, you know, go to New Orleans with your husband for your anniversary, you know, that those are temporary things. And the other advice I would have is you cannot get back these younger years with your children. So whatever you can do to make it work at your workplace is important. I've flexed my schedule before because of some daycare issues. I've done all of those kinds of things. The other thing I would say, I'm sorry, I'm giving a lot of advice.
It's amazing. Just keep going, girl.
The other piece of advice I would give is sometimes people will say to working moms, you're not taking care of your children. You're letting a daycare raise them. I would like to suggest that you choosing the right daycare for you and your family and your situation is taking care of your child. You know, I've had my kids in daycares where I've had to go in the middle of the day and pull them out because I've learned something horrible about the daycare. And that's when you become mama bear, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, this is not going to happen to my child. And so you go in and you look for daycare. I have spent weeks and months before looking for the right daycare for my children. And that is part of your job as a mom. And I say the women who are people who say you're not taking care of your child, they haven't met the women, or we haven't told our story. We have not told the story of how long it takes to pick the right daycare and to make sure that your child is going to be cared for during the day. That is our job. And that's part of taking care of your kids. So, you know, let those things go in one ear and out the other, and know that you are doing your very best to make your family situation work, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And really, if you're doing, at the end of the day, what you think God wants you to be doing, sometimes you have to practice peace. You have to practice cooperating with the peace that he is sending you with that, and just take it one day at a time, one month at a time, one year at a time, and just trust that if you're asking, you know, they have the scripture in the Bible that would a son ask his father for a piece of bread, and would the father give him a stone instead?
Right.
Of course he wouldn't. If we ask our father for a good thing, of course he's going to give it to us. And I think part of growing in spiritual maturity is trusting that he is going to give us the answer to a good prayer like that, but in his timing. You know, it may take a while.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, what God has meant for us is meant for our holiness and salvation. So he has a bigger picture. You know, I have seen things through my work that I would not have seen by being a stay-at-home mom. And I have seen why he's had me in this position. I was just recently able to take a trip to Ecuador to see what it means to have no food, you know? And especially with Pope Francis and his emphasis on true Catholic social justice, I treated that trip just like that, you know, that this is who I am as a Catholic woman, not just as a college administrator. As a Catholic woman, the Lord is wanting me to see this. And it has inspired a passion in me to do mission. And my children see that, and my husband sees that. And it's part of their evangelization, too. So there are ripple effects from what I see at work that impact my family, that impact others, that impact people in Ecuador, you know. And that is affirming for me. And I turn that all over to the Lord. And I would say this, too. Start a gratitude journal. I know that when I've been struck with guilt or jealousy is my bigger sin than guilt, although I've felt guilt before, but my jealousy can kind of overtake me at times. And so start a gratitude journal. You know, I have a spiritual director who made me do this for 2 years, and he said, if you have nothing else to thank God for, thank God for the car that gets you to work, you know. And write 5 things every day that you are grateful for in your life. And that has made a major difference both in my life but in my spiritual journey to heaven, being grateful for where God has you right now and seeing gratitude for every little blessing, because you are blessed. You are beyond belief. And guilt, it's something we all struggle with. I think, and you could probably attest to this too, Erin, you don't have to be a working Catholic mom to feel guilt.
Oh, no.
The world
Very
wants
true.
Women to feel guilty about everything, and we take that on. And we need to be better as women to say, we're not going to feel guilty about this. This is where the Lord has me. You know, there is some good guilt that you can have, but this overwhelming sense of guilt and grief, I think the Lord would want us to turn that over to Him.
Mm-hmm. And learn how to take your thoughts captive and realize that the feelings that are from God, and sometimes you can have bad feelings that are from God if He is kind of poking you to make some changes in your
right.
life. But if you have bad feelings that are just bad feelings and are not pushing you toward virtue, that's called desolation.
Right.
And St. Ignatius has a lot to say about that.
Yes, he does. And so does Blessed Mother Teresa as well.
Oh, really?
She was in desolation, but it was holy desolation. And she could tell the difference between that and depression, you know, that was not leading her to virtue. But her desolation at times was, you know, true holy desolation, sort of like Jesus's experiences in the desert. And we need to realize what's the difference. And you bring up a good point, and it's another thing, and this would be the last thing I talk about. I love St. Louis de Montfort, and
oh yeah,
I love him. Mm-hmm. And he lists 10 principal virtues.
Now go.
I love St. Louis de Montfort, and one of the things he writes about in True Devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary, and these are real old writings, but he talks about her 10 principal virtues, and those are virtues that if we can model after our Blessed Mother, will help us along this journey to heaven. And those are great things to develop, especially in the workplace, and I think especially for women, because they speak to how God made us in His image. And so that would be another piece of advice I would and I can send you what those 10 virtues are, Erin, so you
sure,
can have
that'd be great.
Your notes. Yeah.
Mary, this has been a wonderful episode. I really, really think it's going to bless a lot of people out there, working parents, you know, both men and women. So thank you very much for coming on the show. You were wonderful.
Well, thank you, Erin. I am so excited about your new ministry. So I will be tuning in to the Right Heart podcast.
Thanks, Mary. All right, guys, I have to tell y'all a funny story. So for the past 20 minutes of podcasting with Mary. I have been in complete darkness here in the studio. I forgot to turn on the lights when I walked in earlier, and it's been getting darker and darker and darker. And I think a little bit earlier I tried to say, oh, maybe we should finish it up soon, because I couldn't see anymore. But I was able to reach my phone and get the little flashlight button, and so I'm looking. But anyway, funny story, you guys, I'm still new. I'm just a regular girl trying to be cool and do a podcast, and I'm having so much fun, but it was in total darkness for half the show today. So with that image in mind, thank you for listening. I have loved doing the show. I've loved all of the emails and the comments and the reviews that you've left for me on iTunes and Stitcher and on therightheartpodcast.com. Please do keep them coming. All right, everybody, have a wonderful evening or morning or afternoon or whatever you have in front of you. May God bless you and yours so abundantly.